Pepsi Prebiotic Cola in original and cherry vanilla. That Pepsi taste you love with no artificial sweeteners, only 30 calories, just 5 grams of sugar, and 3 grams of prebiotic fiber. That great Pepsi taste with even more to love. Pepsi Prebiotic Cola. Unbelievably Pepsi.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
So in the scheme of things, I think it goes the Guinness Book of World Records, then the Bible, then Jeffrey Archer in terms of total global sales. It's in the hundreds of millions. It's in hundreds of languages. It's one of those needs no introduction. What is particularly interesting, of course, is that the William Warwick series, for which Jeffrey Archer has been so famous, is coming to a conclusion, as theoretically is Jeffrey Archer's writing, or at least his novel writing. So he tells People magazine in the States. Jeffrey Archer, good morning.
Good morning, Anton. How nice to speak to you again.
It is lovely to speak to you. Can I start with that worrying news of you deciding to hang up the pen? Why?
I'm 85, Anton. I'll be 86 next year. And I came across an idea for a novel some 6 years ago when reading A History of the Second World War. I thought, wow, everybody's missed that. So I looked into it more closely and what happened on September the 15th, 1941, when Hitler changed his mind 3 times and the war could have ended. And I thought, the great historians have written about this, but it's never been done in fiction. And then I realized as I did more and more research that it was bigger than Cain and Abel. And I had the opportunity to write one last big novel. And I thought, I don't want to go on after that. That'll be my swan song.
Now, why?
I'll answer that, Anthony, without giving you the name. But people listening will know there have been authors whose last book has been a disgrace. And one in particular, someone I truly admired, they released her last book when she had Alzheimer's because the publisher was greedy. I don't want to fall into that category.
But in speaking to you, I've had the privilege to talk to you a number of occasions over the last about 10 or 15 years. There is no evident diminution in your capacities. Do you feel any different now that you're 85?
No, and you're quite right. I'm as frightened to stop working, but I will write short stories. I hope to write a play and work on 2 scripts that have been purchased of my books. But this will be the next novel, not Endgame. The next novel will be the last one.
And on the topic of Endgame, funny, I read you'd being a conversation that you recited about having with your publisher when they wondered about you entering into a series when I think at that point you were in your 70s and you promising that you would live to complete it.
You're quite right. At the age of 70, I realizing it was the maker's 70 and 10, I asked if he could be kind enough to let me live to 77, as I had an idea for the Clifton Chronicles, and he did. And I then asked if I could be very greedy and live 7 more years, as I wanted to write the William Warwick series. And it turned out to be 8 books, and the 8th book, Endgame, is the last of the series, when William Warwick has gone from being a constable in book one, Nothing Ventured, right the way through the books to Commander in book 8. And will he become the Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, remembering his latest job is to be in charge of security for the 2012 London Olympics? And I couldn't resist that challenge of him just reaching the perfect age at 2012 to get the job of being in charge of the London Olympics. The problem was that everybody thinks of the London Olympics, and rightly so, as a massive success story. So I went to see Sebco in Monaco and asked if anything had gone wrong. And he said, well, I wouldn't be the man to ask Geoffrey. You'd have to ask Commander Bob Broadhurst, who was actually in charge. But I don't know if he'd be willing to say anything. So I flew back to London and I saw the commander. And he felt after 14 years he could say something. Hold your breath, Anton. He told me 14 things went wrong that the public never found out about. Two of them would have been disastrous. One would have closed the opening ceremony before it began, and the second, he would have had to clear the stadium minutes before Bolt got into the blocks for the 100 metres final. So having given me these 14 things, wow, did that give me ammunition to write. And I added seven of my own from figments of my own imagination. So you, the reader, have to decide what is true and what is fiction.
Well, this raises the question, and it relates to the Hitler-Churchill book that you are working on. Do you not greatly increase your workload by overlapping with actual events? Because you actually have to do an awful lot of research and stand it all up rather than make it all up.
You're quite right. Research is a great part of a book when you mix, as I do in Endgame and I will in the final book, when you mix fact with fiction. And you have to make sure your fact is right. Otherwise, people send letters by the dozen saying, oh, well, I'm surprised you didn't know that the World War started at 3:30 on. Oh, gosh, no one knew. And you get that all the time. The classic one was that I, in one of my books, sank the Titanic on April the 15th. And the amount of people who wrote to me that it sank on October the 16th because the Encyclopedia Britannica had said it sank on the 16th. It actually sank on the 15th, but I had to deal with a lot of letters.
Can I ask on that then, because I can't remember who it was. I was talking to someone a while ago who works in television in Ireland. They had talked about going out to film an interview with you, and they had talked about your penthouse and the views that you have over the Thames and said that it was just a stunning location. And it occurred to me, why does he continue to be so productive? Because he clearly has enough money that he could call it all quits. When you were 70 and launched into William Warwick, why were you not feet up somewhere retired?
You're so vulgar, Anton. There is more to life than money. I haven't had to work since Cain and Abel, which is now on its 142nd reprint. I haven't had to work. I have to work. I love working. I rise at 6 every morning and start writing. I can't stop. So I think energy, funnily enough, is a gift. You can't pop down to Marks and Spencer's and say, I'll have a packet of energy, please. It's a God-given gift, as is any talent. And if you can combine that talent, whatever it might be, whether you be a ballet dancer, a violinist, or an opera singer, if you can combine it with energy, that's when you really succeed.
But I'm intrigued by that because energetic solitude seems odd. I can understand your level of energy in the cut and thrust of politics where you're engaged with other people, where there's constant challenges and that milieu to be in. But energetically locking yourself to a desk and a pen.
Yes, that's a very fair question because you're quite right. I do love the centre of the stage. And in reference to that, I'll just tell you in passing, Anton, that I had a call last night from President Macron. He wondered if I'd be available to be Prime Minister of France. I told him I didn't speak French. He said he didn't think that mattered. In fact, he thought it might be an advantage. But you're quite right. I do love the center of the stage, and I do keep up with politics on a daily basis. And the solitude of writing, you're quite right. It is a strange opposite because I love being totally isolated on my own, no interference with the pen moving across the page. That gives me a totally different thrill, which I absolutely love. And I guess that's lucky because my editor, God bless her, often says, are you enjoying it? It's an interesting sentence because if you're writing a book and not enjoying it, it's time to put the pen down.
That's interesting because I remember, was it Dorothy Parker had that lovely line that says, I don't like writing, I like having written. You actually enjoy the act of writing.
I know exactly what that means. I mean, I understand that it's a thrill when you actually hand the book in. But is it equally, Anton, as you have experienced, you have to wait that period of time. It might only be 2 or 3 days when you're in agony waiting to find out what the publisher thinks. And remembering that my first book, Not a Penny More, Not a Penny Less, was turned down by 12 publishers and published for the 13th publisher paid me £3,000 and published 3,000 copies and only just got rid of them. Yes, you're quite right. That is an agonizing stage and an agonizing early. And I say to new writers, don't give up. Freddie Forsyth once told me, God bless him, that he'd actually 16 publishers turned down the Day of the Jackal. So don't give up.
On the topic of Freddie Forsyth and other writers, who do you read? And do you read fiction or nonfiction?
Well, I'm reading Anthony Beaver's book of the First World War at the moment, for obvious reasons. Plays a part in my final book. My favourite author is Stefan Zweig. I think Beware of Pity is a masterpiece. He's one of those rare authors who can combine great writing with great storytelling, which is uncommon, frankly. Of course, I love many of the classics, as does everyone, which is why they are classics. But some of us are lucky enough, and all of you listening will know this, to find an author that slipped through the net that you personally think is good. And for me, it's Stefan Zweig.
You mentioned Emmanuel Macron having approached you with the offer of political appointment. I know you will have paid at least a passing interest in the Irish presidential race, which is on currently. And as you will be aware, three candidates, one of whom has withdrawn from the race because it was revealed that he retained €3,000 that he should have returned to a tenant 16 years ago. Were you advising him, Geoffrey? Would you say that that's reason to call it quits, or do you think he could have stuck it through?
Well, some people have, haven't they? They've stood up and gone on to great things. I mean, Trump is the example. That, compared to what Trump's been up to before he became president, is fairly minor. It's a decision for him, and it must have been a tough decision, because what a great honour to be president of Ireland.
We mentioned briefly earlier on your age. Do you feel 85? Because you don't sound it.
There are little things that make you aware you're 85. Having had the great honour of running for my country and doing 9.6 for 100 yards, I am aware that I can hardly run 100 yards now. So yes, there are physical things. You pray, of course, that the mental acuity will remain strong. My closest friend at Oxford, Adrian Metcalf, my best man, who I shared rooms with, got dementia at 65 and didn't know who I was, although he'd been my best man, and didn't know who Mary was. And that was at 65. And so, yes, you do dread the fact that at the end of the show, Anton, you will say, poor old thing, we can't interview him again. He's well past it.
And do you get any, because I assume it's one of those things where if you become hypersensitive to it, you reinterpret that which happens to all of us. Like, I find myself walking into rooms and going, why did I come in here? But by virtue of my current age, I don't fret about it too much. As you get closer to 90, does that kind of stuff linger with you?
How old are you?
I am 48.
Oh, you're a child. You shouldn't even be thinking about these things. But you're right. There's a marvellous article in the Daily Telegraph by one of my heroes, Hockney, who I think is such the greatest artist in my lifetime. And he's saying he's 88 and he is preparing for death, which is why he works every single day. And that I do understand. that you mustn't slow down. And we live in a... When I was a child, Anton, people retired at 65. They got a gold watch. And then they died at 70, which was very convenient for the state. We're now all living far too long. And while the Japanese announced last week that they've got 8,000 people over the age of 100, and you have to pay for retirement between 70 or 65 even and 100, wow, it's no wonder most countries, including Japan, are bankrupt.
Well, as long as you age with your level of productivity, your contribution to the tax take is still significant, Jeffrey. So we should just emulate your approach to this. Can I ask, and I mean this in the nicest way, I every now and then you are given somewhat to hyperbole, so let me make sure that this is true. Could you actually run 100 yards in 9.6?
I ran 9.6 against the Russians. I came last. You always do your best time running last. I ran 9.6 against Canadians and came third. Only world champions, only world record holders do their best time winning races. The mediocre lot like me tag on behind and get our best times when we're up against superior athletes, which in my case wasn't difficult.
The new book is Endgame. The next book is theoretically, though we hope this isn't the case, going to be his last fully full novel in fiction, though there will be other stuff thereafter. Can we book you in for, what will it be, your nudging 87 when the next book comes out? Will you rejoin us if you're willing?
I'd be honoured to do so. And I said, heard you say with the your usual irreverence, theoretically, I will tell you now, I will never write a bigger story than the one I'm working on now. And I hope that you will be among the first to read it. May I remind you that it was an Irishman, Gay Byrne, who held up Cain and Abel and said, this book is the best thing I've read in 20 years. He then did an extreme kindness, which changed my career. He rang his friend, Johnny Carson, and said, you've got a youngster coming over, and he's trooping around the country promoting his book, Cain and Abel. I suggest you read it. I was on his show, and that changed. That changed my whole life.
You're kidding. Gay, was that instrumental in your career?
Oh, yes. People in Ireland know how seriously Gay held a massive, and rightly so, reputation. What they didn't realize was that reputation spread beyond the Irish shores, and his equals in other countries were in admiration of him. And he had some very classy friends in other countries, and I benefited from that.
Well, that's amazing, because on Gay Byrne's last show, on his last Late Late, one of the guests was Merv Griffin. And Merv Griffin, in an Irish context, is essentially anonymous. He was a benign American that was sitting on the panel. But to everybody in the state, I mean, Merv Griffin is one of the most powerful figures in global entertainment. I hadn't realized the link with Carson. It's a lovely thing to hear that he had that effect.
And Gay was an incredibly modest, down-to-earth man. When he left, the government offered him this massive job. He was very, very nervous about it. And by then we were friends, I would like to think. By then it was 20 years later and we were friends. And he rang and said, I don't have a great deal of political experience. How do you feel about me taking this job? And I said, Gay, you're a highly intelligent man. You're a highly sophisticated man. You're a highly experienced man. You will bring fresh light to the subject. And they're bloody lucky to have you.
I assume that was the chairmanship of the Road Safety Authority, which, of course, was a big thing at the time. Jeffrey, it is always a great pleasure to talk to you and look forward to doing it again. The new book is Endgame. Jeffrey Archer, thank you.
Thank you very much, Anton.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Did you know that Byers Airport Subaru is the oldest Subaru retailer in the entire country? And we're conveniently located right by the airport. Start your journey today at columbussubaru.com. Byers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.